The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Hello, is this Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve.
Hey, how you doing? This is Gene from Third Eye.
Hey, how you doing, man? What's going on?
Good. How's the weather out there in Frisco?
It's just like starting to rain. I think today, I mean, it has rained all year long. They're like pissing and moaning about a drought over here. So, it's like dusted. I mean, the last week it's been like 70. It's been like spring weather. Because I want to shoot the video for The Fear Within, and I want to do it in the snow, and I've been waiting for freaking March already, and I've been waiting for the snow. So we might do it next weekend if it snows enough up here. So it's kind of something I'm looking for. So we'll see what happens. We're probably going to wait for, I think, the next 4 days, which means there'll be snow up in the mountains. We actually have to play in Reno on Saturday night. I'm like, oh, shit, it's supposed to dump a ton of snow. So getting from the Bay Area to Reno, maybe, I'm like, I hope we ain't going to cancel the show because we have to leave on that morning.
Right.
And it just, you know, it would take 10 hours to get there. I ain't going to sweat that. I'll turn around and fuck that. It should only be like 3.5 hours, but, you know, they'll make you pull over and wait for it to clear up. They'll make you throw chains on.
Right.
I honestly couldn't live in the East Coast. I'm not a snow guy. I'm straight up California, fucking true and true. I don't mind if, on Christmas Day if I open the door and it's 65 degrees outside. I don't bother once in a believe it.
Well, you're in the right half of the country for that, man.
Yeah, I know that.
All right, so if you're ready, we can get rolling.
Yeah, sure, whatever you want, brother.
Listen to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema and music. Tonight, legendary thrash vocalist Steve Zetrosusa on Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Third Eye Cinema, your source for music and film that matter, cult, underground, independent, and generally falling outside the mainstream, corporate boardroom, paid-by-numbers bullshit. Tonight we speak with one of the most recognizable vocalists of the thrash metal scene. From his earliest days fronting the band that became the Mighty Testament, to his long association with the Punishing Exodus, his snarling Bon Scott-inspired vocals graced any number of classic 80s Bay Area thrash standards. Now re-emerging with a uniquely family-centric yet pummeling combo that harkens back to the Pleasure of the Flesh era sound that he made famous, he's back and more aggressive than ever. Not losing a whit of his biting political social commentary or classic thrash aggression to time and fatherhood, join us as we get down to the nitty-gritty about his respective bands, the state of the world today, and a surprisingly neck-breaking retro-styled assault of Hatriot with the man, the myth, Steve Zetrosusa. But just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, here's Steve and Sons alongside guitarist Costa Varvatakis, with a little ditty about Second Amendment rights, because you'll take them from his cold, dead hands.
So, as we set out this year to defeat the divisive forces that would take freedom away, I want to say those fighting words for everyone within the sound of my voice to hear and to heed. From my cold, dead hands.
We'll be right back.
listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Steve Zetro Souza. Stay tuned.
From Artillery, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Rock the fuck out. I don't know. Do you want me to do it again? Hey, it's Kara. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Okay, I'll do it again. Just play like all the retakes so people can laugh at it. Hey, this is Kara from Artillery, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, this is Alex Gutierrez from Artillery, saying hello here from Canada. We want to thank you guys for listening and for giving us your support. Keep tuned to Third Eye Cinema. Cheers.
This is Brian Lawrence from Dream Death, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Okay. Here you start out.
Hi, this is Mirai from Psy, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Dr. McCannibal from Psy. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Nige Rocket from Onslaught, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
What's up, everybody? This is Nev from Exhumer, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Keep it locked, the Thrash Dial.
Awesome.
This is Tony Patel from Whiplash, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
We have with us tonight a man who is well and truly a vital linchpin of the Bay Area thrash metal scene. From his start with the band that would become Testament to his long association with Exodus, his snarling Bon Scott-inspired vocals are part and parcel of any number of classic 80s thrash standards. Now pulling together a uniquely family-centric combo that harkens back to the Pleasures of the Flesh era sound he made famous, please join me in welcoming the man, the myth, Steve Zetro Souza. Steve, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. It's good to be here. What's going on?
So you've been an important part of the San Francisco Bay Area thrash scene from its very inception. So tell us a bit about the birthing of the scene in those days.
I think when I get asked that, it's hard to realize that it was so special. You know, now you look back at it, and even to look back at it even as far as back as 10 years ago, it was like, wow, you know, it was really such a special thing. I mean, how many cities, and back then I thought every city was like this, honestly. Had 15 killer thrash bands to beat. And nobody did. But the Bay Area did. You know, you had Slayer, you had Megadeth, you had Dark Angel. There were some bands that were in, you know, out of coming out of L.A. that were thrash bands. And in New York, you had, you know, Overkill, you had Anthrax,
right.
You had Nuclear Assault. You had the hardcore stuff like Cro-Mags, Agnostic, where they kind of put us with some types of bands like that. Crumb Suckers, bands like that. And then you had your death metal in Florida, Malevolent Creation, Morbid Angel, Cannibal Corpse. And so I thought, you know, you had like this great scene everywhere in the Bay Area. You had Metallica, you had Exodus, you had Death Angel, you had Possessed, you had Legacy, you had Violence, you had Forbidden, you had Blind Illusion, you had Mordred. You could just go down the list of bands that were just so killer, and it seemed like, you know, and at the time, you know, we're 19, 20, we figure every city's got a scene like this, right?
Exactly.
And then you come out of it later in life, and you find out, wow, I mean, it really wasn't like that for everyone else. Not everybody could go to Rookies and on a Tuesday night and see Possessed, Legacy, and Death Angel for $6, and the show starts at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know? So it wasn't like now it's completely different. But I think for all of us that were involved back on it now, it's going, wow, there's always something going on every night. It seemed like Friday night was one set of bands playing, and Saturday night was another set of bands playing, and then those bands would mix. So by Tuesday or Wednesday, and there were shows Monday night, Tuesday night, They used to have this show at the old Waldorf called Metal Mondays. And I swear to God, that's where you saw Metallica for the first time. And it was like packed on a Monday night for heavy metal. Packed.
Wow.
And so definitely a different time than now, for sure.
So the early scene was quite incestuous with vocalists, guitarists, and other people jumping from one big-name act to another. And while things would continue in this vein with all the thrashers cycling in and out of bands like Death, Slayer, and Testament throughout the 90s and 2000s, probably the most famous of these early swaps involved the guys from Exodus, namely Kirk Hammett, who moved to Metallica, replacing David Mustaine, and yourself leaving Legacy to replace Paul Baloff, who sort of wandered off into a number of projects and demos like the one he did with Heathen and the short-lived Piranha. So how did all this start out in the first place with you joining the guys from Legacy?
Actually, my brother, I was playing in a band with Phil Demmel from Machine Head, and my brother was actually playing bass with the guys from Legacy. One of the guys that I was playing with from Phil Demmel, their cousin was Eric Peterson, and they lived in Alameda. And I hear this demo with no music on it. And the song was, they called, I can't remember what song it turned into. It was like Secret Agent. And then they had the song that was called The Ballad. I wrote the lyrics to that originally, and then they rewrote it. They called it The Ballad, but it was called The Legacy, actually.
Right.
And my brother was in there, and all the guys in this band that I was playing with had girlfriends, and I hated it. I'm like anti-girlfriend. Why anything when it comes to the band? Women should just, you know, sit back. Let the boys play music and everything will be okay.
I hear that.
So I was like, you know, I'm tired of these guys. Every time we go to practice, everybody's got their girlfriend. They're just driving me nuts. So my brother goes, why don't you call the guys in Legacy? And so I called them up and I go, I heard a tape of theirs. And it was this music that I'd never heard before. And it was thrash metal.
Yep.
It was that, the total punk, the real speed of punk, fine. Like, 80s, new wave of British heavy metal or rock and roll, like a hard rock and roll.
Right.
Like Engineer, UFO, that type of stuff in Lindsay. It still had an edge to it. And that was the first time I heard it. So I went out and I petitioned for him. And nobody was looking back. That time, if you said you were a singer, you were a singer. Because there were so many bands. People, I mean, Violence, I remember when they got Sean. Sean was just a guy we all worked with at this car import place, studio place. And Sean's like, I could do it. I'm like, oh, okay, can you play bass? He's like, yeah, but I think I can do this. And then there you go, Sean turned into the singer for Violence. And that's how it happened. So a lot of it was that.
Wow.
So for somebody like myself who actually wanted to be a singer, had a sound, you know what I mean, kind of distinctive sound. Again, it wasn't the greatest singer, still not the greatest singer, just I have very distinctive, I call it the Roy Orbison syndrome. If you hear Roy Orbison, you know who the hell he is. If you hear Zetro, you know it's him.
Yep.
You know? So it's basically kind of how I explain it. And I hooked up and I went, you know, and within 2 years' time, we had built that band up from a room in Oakland to we could pack 300-400 a night, no problem.
Right. The Legacy demo is quite polished, both in terms of production quality and how the songs were ported over almost unchanged from the versions you performed to the ones released on the first Testament album with Chuck Billy on vocals, which is also called The Legacy. I think the only one they left off was Reign of Terror, so I don't know why that was. I don't know how many folks know that Alex Skolnick actually came from a comfortably entrenched family of sociologists. My drummer came home one day with their textbook in hand, and right there on the cover is this nice family photo with Alex, complete with the hair and that white streak.
You don't even know. It was like Tuesday and Thursday nights we couldn't have practice because we had family therapy. Now, remember, this is 1984, okay? And I'm like, therapy? Let me tell you what therapy is in the Sousa household. He grabs you by the throat, around the neck, and tells you, look, motherfucker, don't do it again. That was therapy in the Sousa house. Skolnick stayed with my cousin because his first name, I called him Alex Skullwrecker. He wasn't even Alex Skolnick. I referred to him on stage as Skullwrecker, Alex Skullwrecker. He would hear stuff, demo stuff of me in between songs. The lead guitar, Alex Skullwrecker. Why? Because in 1984, this movie came out called Revenge of the Nerds.
Right.
And the lead character's name was Lewis Skolnick.
You're right.
And I was like, there's no fucking way you're coming on stage with me looking with being Lewis Skolnick's brother, Alex Skolnick. Okay? It's not cool. It doesn't sound cool. him up at night, and I'll just say, Alex Skowrecker! And he'll just stand up and go, no way, where is he? Because he'll know. He knows I'm the only one that did that. That was his name for a while before he became the ultimate Alex Spellman.
Well, you know, you could always brush some guy on stage to play Booger.
Right, exactly. Exactly, that's great.
But most people do know that he, like Kirk Hammett, studied under Joe Satriani and had more jazzy or progressive leanings. And that's why he left Kessner for a while to be replaced by folks like death metal guitar hero James Murphy and Forbidden's Glenn Matthias.
Right.
So how much of the music with Legacy was driven by Eric Peterson? Was Skolnick more of like a hired gun in that respect?
When Alex is there, Alex writes, that's for sure. A lot of the stuff, you know, obviously the first Legacy stuff was a lot of like, Derek, his cousin, who was the guitar player before Alex, and he actually wrote Reign of Terror. Yeah, he wrote the music, I wrote the lyrics.
Right.
And Alex was, at first, he just kind of sat in a little bit, and it was kind of like Eric writing it, Greggy, and myself. And then Alex learned quickly, though, he picked it up writing, because I was like, okay, well, Alex, you and Eric need to get together.
Right.
Because you guys are the guitar players, and that's what guitar players do. You guys get together on Tuesday night, go buy some beer, some weed. I don't give a shit what you do. You get together and you fucking do this, you know. And so that's how kind of – and we do that. Now I do that with Adrian. I've done that with basically every band I'm in, and it works. So Alex turned into more of a writer. So, like, now, because I wrote music on the last two Testament records, I wrote songs on both of the records, the last two, and one of the songs I wrote lyrically was actually Alex and myself, called The Day and the Death. So
nice.
He wrote that song half lyrically, and I wrote it half lyrically. So he does write. He has a lot of inspiration. I thought on Formation, he wrote a song called Fear, False Evidence Appearing Real. For somebody who, like myself, who does wordplay so well, I thought that was brilliant. I thought that, and Alex came up with that. Very much a good writer. He knows what sounds right, and he's very tasty. So not just a hired gun. I think when he's there, he's definitely a part of it.
In the Legacy days, though, that was basically Eric, right? That's what I was trying to get at.
Yes, basically, yes. By the time, a little bit of Alex, as I was probably going into Exodus, that was more Alex, definitely. Right.
So what was the impetus for you leaving Legacy? Was it just you got a call from the Exodus guys and that was it? Or was there something?
Well, obviously I get a call from the Exodus guys and this band, and who knows what's going to happen with Legacy at that point. Yeah, they had 12 deals on the table, but there was nothing. But the thing was, here's this band that just put out this record, and on one of the songs it says, to kick in your face and rape and murder your wife.
Right.
And that band wanted me. Are you kidding me? Anybody in the world would have fucking jumped in a second. Besides, I felt that Exodus was way more brutal.
Yep.
And way more tongue-in-cheek and right in your face. And I didn't know. I wrote a lot of fantasy stories with the very first Legacy stuff. It's kind of very Dio-ish type material. And I think what was good for me, because the way I'm geared now lyrically was very much in the vein of how Exodus wrote, very tongue-in-cheek. And I learned a lot of that from Gary Holt. So now songs like Superkiller, Pragmatic Acts Are So Atrocious,
right.
I get that from the learning process that I learned as a writer working with Gary.
Right.
So,
you know, some years down the road, Testament brought you back for First Strike, Still Deadly, to perform on a pair of re-recordings of old Legacy tracks. And more interesting, I think that was around the same time that Bailiff was doing his return engagement with Exodus. So what was it, like old home week?
Well, I think what was happening was, Chuck was sick at that point when they were doing that.
Right.
So I knew that I was, and they asked me to do that. And because they'd never done Reign of Terror, really, and before they wanted me to go in and perform it and perform Alone in the Dark, which, you know, when they play that, and if I'm in the crowd, Chuck will always, Cetro, get up here, you're doing this one with me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Doing the songs that I wrote. But it's like, I get along with that. Those are my brothers still, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just good. Kind of look at the band that way, you know. It's kind of, I always feel like Eric will call me and goes, I think I need you to write some lyrics on my album, dude. That kind of stuff. But okay, I will be checking out if I got time, but I'm so focused with Hatriot right now. It's something, I don't know if I'm, they're writing right now. Testament's actually in the Bay Area. Yeah. Alex is here, Gene's here, I think they went to Soundwave and played that festival in Australia, and then they were coming back to continue writing, but for the next 4 months, they're supposed to be locked down, Testament-like.
Right. And, you know, you also mentioned Dublin Death Patrol, where you share vocals with Chuck Billy and Phil Demmel
right.
from Violence, the guitarist there. So there's obviously no Harrison to bury there.
No. Yeah, we won't be doing that. And Phil, they're recording new Machine Head right now.
Right.
So everybody's kind of doing their day jobs, staying with their day jobs basically right now. You know what I mean? They're staying well and focused. I know I am. I said I'm probably not going to write any New Testament. I don't have time. I just put out a new album with Hatriot, and honestly, I plan on going in the studio in January to do it again.
Nice.
So, I mean, I told Costa we need to get very busy this year that we're going to be on tour. We still need to write songs because I just feel that, you know, I'm against the 3 and 4 years waiting for records thing. I just think it's really lame.
It is. It's so long. So here you are with Exodus, who are undisputedly the biggest of the San Francisco crowd with Metallica, Megadeth, and Slayer. To my feeling and what I remember back then, they were more like LA-oriented acts, at least at the time. So outside of the 3 songs that they demoed with Bailoff, were you in on the creative process at all with Pleasure of the Flesh, or did they have the album more or less ready to go?
Oh, yeah. No. I helped write Chemical. I wrote Faster Than You Ever Lived to Be. I wrote Till Death Do Us Part. I wrote the second half of Seeds of Hate, where it gets really fast. I wrote all that part. So, no, I was definitely, I could go on stage right now and sing every one of those, even sing my legacy song. I don't forget my lyrics, man. I know what's going on. So I was in on the process right away. Not everything was written, so I went right in. Some stuff was, you know, they had my CTA was written, but I added a part to it. Pleasures of the Flesh, the song was written,
right.
but I added a part to it. Brain Dead was written. I didn't add anything to that. Loved Brain Dead from the beginning. Didn't want to touch it, but Bailoff did an amazing job with that.
Yep.
Deranged, Gary wrote all of. And no, I came in right away. I took that to his part, wrote the whole thing myself. So I came in right away and started writing. By Fabulous Disaster, I mean, it was probably lyrically, probably 65-35 Susan Holt.
Pleasure of the Flesh was a very different album from Bonded by Blood. You know, it was more subtle, if that's the right word. It felt more constructed and comparatively mid-tempo. You know, the wild aggression of the first album become more internalized in a way. You know, that chunk of rhythm guitars and the flashy solos were still front and center. But it was more like a slow burn. And I remember at the time I was quite surprised by it, and in fact still prefer it in a lot of ways. I'm sure your very different style of vocals contributed to the more sinister feel in no small measure. Do you know where this was coming from, this major change in sound?
I think they wanted to grow as a band because they were replacing Paul regardless, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically how they felt that he wasn't going to be able to grow vocally with the band. That's what I was told, and that's what I was under the understanding. When I heard those songs too, I was like, wow. Because I was such a big fan of Bonded by Blood myself.
Right.
To this day, when we went and played live, it's like, okay, cool. So how many Bonded songs do we get to play tonight? I love playing those. I mean, screw Fabulous, Pleasures, Impact, Force, any of the shit I did on that. I was like, screw that. What Bonded songs are we playing tonight? You know what I mean? That kind of a thing. So that was the Todd Gray album that got me in the band.
Right.
And that was the album though. I was like, wow, how great this is. These guys are just so, you know, this is awesome. But I also know, as like I've done, I don't know if you're familiar with what I've done recently with Hatriot.
Yes.
I think Heroes of Origin is the same way. Heroes of Origin is a totally brutal record. And then Dawn of the New Centurion, still a very heavy killer, but way dark, way more moody, and definitely more evolved.
Exactly.
So I think basically between Bonded and Pleasures, that's what happened there. And I like that. That shows growth. You have to do that.
No, I loved it. I was always like a bigger fan of that album, and it took me a while to get into Bonded because it was so different. Because, you know, I was coming into thrashing right at that point when Pleasures dropped or just before it. And I was like, oh, wow, this is awesome. And I went back and I was like, well, what's this other thing? I mean, I like it, but it's different. It's very different.
Right. I mean, there's some people that are like, Paul's their singer. I hear all the time, dude, I'm sorry, but you're my singer as far as when my Exodus, you know.
Exactly.
And obviously,
right.
Rob has his era, you know. I mean, Rob's been in the band 10 years now. So that's just kind of the way I look at it. I've said this over a few recent interviews. I saw a very good interview with Slash, and Slash says, you know, my era of Guns N' Roses is different from the era that was after me and even the era now, you know. So it's not that is it better or is it worse or what do I like? It's all different and it's all relevant.
Exactly. And the riffs on this album were well and truly untouchable. I mean, like you said, Deranged, Branded, Parasite, the title track. And I know Slayer were listening to some portions of Seeds of Hate before they wrote Seasons of the Abyss. So
obviously. Or even Metallica, because there's what's that one song where James, My Life's Love, let's say, planting the seeds of hate.
Right.
And it's like, wow, I guess, you know, he's paying attention to what's going on. And that was like the first time where I did the vocal and I was singing like, hatred, kind of singing it out. Nobody had really tried that before, especially with Exodus here, because they were so brutally. So definitely it was a step up vocally, I think, for them as well. And they knew that I had the ability to do it.
Right.
So
what were all those little bits that were being added in, like the loony in the beginning talking in circles at the start of the album, or the jungle tribal breaks and pleasures? I thought those really added to the experience.
I think so, too. I did that a little bit on Dawn of the New Century, and I want to do more of that type of stuff. I really like that. Well, basically, the song is called Deranged, and in San Francisco, where we recorded the record, in the Tenderloin. I don't know if you know anything about San Francisco.
Right.
The Tenderloin, especially in the 1980s, is where all the drug addicts hung out.
Yep.
You know what I mean? All the seedy people. But when the sun goes down, don't be in the Tenderloin. You know what I mean? But no, here's fucking Exodus recording their album right in the middle of it. So basically, I wasn't there that night. I was gone. I went home. And they went out on the street and they found this guy. And I don't even know his name. They called him Tom Skid. Obviously, he's on Skid Row.
Right.
And they bought him some wine, and they bought him some food, and they brought him into the studio, and they put headphones on him, and they sat his ass down, and they had a conversation with him for probably about an hour. And what you heard was a meshed together, edited version of the conversation. Because when they said, you know, because Ali goes in, I like salad. I just ate a nice salad. Well, okay, but you heard what they were saying beforehand,
right.
They were asking him, what have you been eating lately? What do you like? What is your favorite type of food?
Okay.
And then he just comes up with, I like salad. So when you're listening to that and there's that pause and then he just says, I like salad. I just ate a nice salad. It makes it even sound like, holy shit, this guy's just talking from one end of the circle
together.
Right. It sound like he's a deranged character. So basically, that's what we were saying. Can you imagine? We're fucking 22 years old and we're coming up with this shit. You know what I mean?
And, you know, that cover's unforgettable, too. I'm not sure I want to stop and throw back a few at that particular bar.
Oh, I know. Exactly. We love that. And all of the bones and the skulls were all real human bones and skulls. We actually rented from a place in San Francisco, Sticks and Stones and Skull and Bones.
Wow.
Just for that purpose, if you want to use props or stuff like that, he's licensed to have that stuff.
Nice.
So if you can't own, it's against the law to own that stuff, you know, it just is.
So after this, the band's sound and style took another right turn, where you were going for more of an Anthrax vibe. You know, like the Ultraviolent thing had turned more party thrash, which is very much akin to where the 80s punk crossover scene was with kind of bands like Gangrene, DRI, Murphy's Law. It's like, here, buddy, let's have a few beers and beat each other's heads in. Which brings us directly to your anthem to the mosh pit, the Toxic Waltz.
Right, good, friendly, violent fun, exactly. We're not like, this isn't personal or nothing. We're all just having a good time beating the shit out of each other. You know, so never mind us. If somebody's got a black eye or walks out with a bloody nose, hey, they knew what they were getting into. You know what I mean? What did you say? It's all in good fun. Right? Everybody? Somebody? Right? Right, Mom? Oh, no, Mom doesn't think so. She's going to sue us for $20,000 because her fucking kid came to the show broke his arm. So don't think that didn't happen. Oh, yeah, that stuff happened, too.
But right down to the cover, Fabulous Disaster signaled a major change in the Exodus camp. I mean, you even started recording covers, which were both quite excellent, by the way, of War's Lowrider and AC/DC's Overdose, which is not something any of us expected to hear from a band whose sound was once described as kill metal.
No, not at all. Not at all. That's why I think that I like the evolution of it. Always kept everybody guessing, kind of.
Exactly. And you even did a good Nugent cover on the Objection Overruled EP of Free For All. So how much of this was attributable to your influence as like the new guy on the block?
Honestly, we did Overdose because I'm very Bond Scottish.
Yeah.
I mean, I have my own AC/DC tribute act just
in
case I get a bug up my ass. If you Bond Scott, I go book a show. I get these guys together for an hour and a half. I can only do Bond Scott era AC/DC. And so they knew that I've always sung that. So to do Overdose was a no-brainer. Free For All was all Gary's idea, as well as the Blackfoot song, Good Morning.
I was going to go exactly where you just were, that, you know, you have the Bon Scott thing down with covers of Overdose and later Dirty Deeds coming off right in that ballpark
right.
of Angus & Company. And it's no surprise that you later had a cover band dedicated to this with AC/DC. That said, there was also a decided move towards political insurgence with The Last Act of Defiance calling for prison reform, Fabulous Disaster decrying nuclear armament. You even took a leaf from the pages of post-Don Doty Dark Angel with Like Father, Like Son about the cycle of abuse. You know, you really were kind of, I hate to say progressing, but you were moving more into a real world with sort of political vibe with all this.
I agree. I think I'm even kind of really at that now.
Yes.
If you're going to look at my last two records.
Yes, we're going to get there.
I've really moved into that group quite well, and I feel that nobody's safe. That's for damn sure.
Yep.
You know what I mean? If you definitely bust me, I'm going to come at you. I think Dave Mustaine is the same way, you know. Dave's
True.
Very disturbed by how things are presented and gone on. And I think all of us as sensible, rational human beings in general look at some of this stuff like, what? So people always say, is that where do you get your, you know, your lyrical content from? I'm like, really? Turn the TV on.
I was going to say.
Newspaper.
Nah, I was going to say, check
the
newspaper.
It's all laid out for you. Believe me. I mean, we're thrash metal. We're metal. We write about violence. You got no better fodder to fuck with than that right there.
Exactly.
So that's why I'm just like, I have no problem with it, you know, and having that lately especially. And it doesn't have to do with even the band name. You can take as kind of, you know, we're kind of a political angle. It's not like that. I have things and social issues that bug me, you know what I mean? Or I think that I can write something good about, or if I can show awareness in that way. I mean, case in point, obviously, Silence in the House of the Lord, which
yeah.
is probably the fifth subject on the new album, you know, where I'm not pulling any punches. Hey,
not
Vatican really plays shit down. The Vatican plays this crap down. You know, and I'm, you know, it's someone like myself, I can't, who's conscious and socially aware and goes, hey, wait a minute, people supposed to be the best thing on earth?
Right.
Aren't they supposed to be what's all right about what a human should act like?
Yep.
And they do the worst fucking thing you could do aside from killing a person?
Yep.
To me, that oxymoron just kills me, you know? So for me not to write about it, it's just, it's like,
closing your eyes,
you
yeah.
know,
burying your head in the sand.
It's what I'm all about, you know?
Yep.
And I'm very much about our freedoms.
Yep.
And so obviously the first track out of the gate, and I'm not trying to get on anybody's leg because I don't own guns. I don't shoot guns. I don't hunt. I don't have any reason to. It's not something that I like personally. But did they put it in as an amendment 240 fucking years ago?
Yep.
They sure did. So that doesn't mean that any new regime can come in and go, you know, we're going to tweak with that a little bit. We can do that, and I'm against that. You know, and I'm for guys like Ted Nugent. Even in the last verse, I used to give old Uncle Ted a shout and join the NRA. You know, it's like, this is a freedom. How many people, like, especially from where you guys are from, when you're 10 years old, the old man goes and buys you a fucking shotgun, and you guys go hunting, you know? That's,
yep.
that's so in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, back in the East, that's a tradition, you know? And so I just feel that I'm not going to let, you know, you can just, you're going to get away with it, but not about with some of us knowing it, you know? And again, with Super Kill, I just refer to it as Super Kill. At the end, chant Free
Pussy,
Pussy
Riot.
Riot,
yes.
We do mean Free Pussy Riot. We're in 2014, and you're trying to tell me you're going to try to suppress people for freedom of speech?
Yep.
Come on, it's time already. Stop this bullshit. And it's not just, I'm glad they're out of jail. You know, I'm glad that they freed them because, and it's not like Free Pussy Riot has the band. Anything that's freedoms is what that stands for.
Right.
So in 10 years from when you hear the songs and wonder what that means, well, it meant a certain thing. It also stands for a bigger message.
Yeah.
You know, not to Free Pussy Riot the girls. Free Pussy Riot is what we stand for, especially somebody who's written lyrics for 30 years and have people want to put stickers on them.
Right.
Whatever.
Exactly.
What,
what was with the multiple albums based on A Lesson in Violence? Because you had the one Greatest Hits from Combat, another one with a very similar title from Relativity, and then they bring back Bela for that live Another Lesson in Violence. It gets a bit confusing.
I know. You know, it's like, how many more lessons in violence can you have?
You keep learning.
I guess, You can always teach a lesson in violence. You just sit on your knees and bow. I don't know. I think that's the band's signature catchphrase. If you were to say Exodus, what do you say? A lesson in violence.
Yeah.
You don't say, when you say bond in my blood, you say, but if you're going to say Exodus, the catchphrase is a lesson in violence.
Yeah.
I mean, because to me, again, kicking your face and rape and murder your wife, they have songs called A Lesson in Violence. And they're telling you how they're going to teach you this lesson in violence. And to me, from a lyrical standpoint, it's like, these guys have no boundaries. They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I mean, before Bonded by Blood came out, I had never heard an album in the world where they said, on the record, to kick in your face and rape and murder your wife. I mean,
yeah, it was
wow.
Pretty intense.
That is like, wow. I mean, to this day, that holds water,
yep.
You know? So it's just, that's definitely, I mean, just the whole persona, the whole Exodus vibe, it's like we would meet fans in lines outside of gigs, and they would see us, and they would be like, Roxana! They would turn into this fucking Dr. Heckle, Jekyll Hyde thing, like they would go from nice, chunny boy to... The minute they saw us, they had to go into this frenzy, and we wouldn't be like, oh, hey,
right.
What's up? How's it going, man? And we wouldn't be like, hey, what's going on? You know? These fucking guys are like, you know, they're on fucking 20 grand. Let's go! Start hitting their head and get something. Okay, so calm down, right? Fuck, they'll think I did it. You know what I mean? So it's just, you know, the persona is like when you hear Exodus, oh, Slayer has the same effect. No, Slayer has worse effect.
Yeah.
Remember, I mean, especially if you go in the day, you had a tough time opening for Slayer, and I don't care who you were, because they didn't want to hear it.
Yep.
Slayer's, like, they needed to play, especially in the day, by themselves. You open for Slayer, the fans like, fuck you, yeah, Slayer!
Exactly, for the whole set.
Regardless of how heavy you were, how good you were, fuck you, Sancho, Slayer, I love you all night, but good night, Slayer! You know, it's like... So I get it, you know, I totally get it. And that basically was how Exodus was the same way. The fans were very jacked up.
Yep.
Some crowds, I walked out on stage, and I couldn't take two steps out, and they're piled three high on each other, just killing each other.
Right.
It was the way the attitude was.
Impact is imminent. It was very similar to what you were doing on Fabulous Disaster. I think it was the only time where there wasn't a clear progression from one album to the next.
Right.
There was still some standout tracks like the Lunatic Parade and the title cut, but what's most interesting about this one is you were no longer with the usual indie thrash bands came up on like Metal Blade, Megaforce, Combat, and Roadrunner. It was your first album on Capitol Records, which was a big major. How weird was that, being on a label that Nat King Cole started?
Check it out. We thought we had hit a home run. We thought we were taking care of. You're always down in the back of your mind as you're doing the band. I'm like, I like what's in my mind right now with Hatred, with any band. How long can I go? How long is this going to last? At what point am I going to be that rich millionaire rock star? Is it the next record? Is it the one after that? And so I think we were always looking as that, and then Impact was just such a heavy record, and we wanted that. We told each other, we're going, you know what we're going to do? We're going to write. We're going on a major label debut. We're going to be the heaviest band to ever be on a major label debut. And that worked as a double-edged sword because they came back at us and were like, check it out, guys. This album sucks, and it does suck. They just didn't know what to do with it. They're a fucking major label.
Right.
They're worried used to selling 5 million Garth Brooks records. You know what I mean? They're not worried about Fred's bang-head bangers. So fucking... They're like, can you guys just kind of go write another record? And that's why you got Force. And that's how Force came out. It was like we had like a major label. We have a $3.5 million record contract that we signed.
Right.
7 record deal with Capitol. The advances were like $300,000, $400,000. By the last record, the last advance for an album, $750,000. We had to do a record. A lot of money. A lot of fucking money.
Yep.
Well, like an expensive wide receiver, you sign a big contract and you don't catch any balls after the second season, you get cut.
Yep.
That's what happened to us. They told us our production better get better, so we got all scared. We started writing songs that we thought were what they wanted and what they could market, not what we were about.
Right.
And I think that's why, for me, I love
half of Force of Habit. The other half, I hate it.
Yeah.
I just hate it. And it's not like, I had it on about a month ago, and I was fast-forwarding through tracks like it was, don't let go, wait, listen to that one. Oh, I like this one. We'll hear this. Oh, nope, next one. Nope.
Yep.
Oh, that's that Elvis Costello cover. Ew, yeah. Don't even play that. What the fuck were you losers thinking?
Yeah, don't, I mean, you actually just what I was going to say. It was like, what the hell happened with Force Habit? Because if there's ever a radical change in the Exodus sound, that was it.
Oh, radical.
And even in terms of covers, like you said, things are skewing very different. I mean, the Stones is one thing, but you're covering Elvis Costello. I mean, what the hell?
I know. That's why we were all sitting there looking at each other, you know, from where the guys in the slap shop, they're selling the team, and he goes, fucking Chrysler plant, here I come. We're all looking at each other. So you think about that. Fucking Chrysler plant, here we go.
So after this, the band breaks up. I mean, it was a bad time for metal per se, and thrash was already starting to get unfashionable.
You were over with.
Even among diehards, thrash was getting somewhat unfashionable. Yeah. Death metal and then black metal coming out. So what did you guys put your hands to for a good 10 years there?
Well, I've been a union foreman for a construction company for 20.
Oh, well, there you go.
Just to let you know where my hands have been. That's why now I can do what I want musically because it doesn't run my life.
Right.
You see? So I could go, you know what? I don't want to do that. And I don't have to. I make 90 grand a year at work, so fuck you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'll do this how I want. So
that's the
and
way
I've been
do.
Doing that for 20 years.
After that short-lived Baylor for Union, Holt and Hunter pulled Exodus back together for the War's My Shepherd EP, followed by Temple of the Damned. And it was
right. Nice
to see one of the early Kirk Hammett era Exodus tracks finally getting a proper recording with Die By His Hands and Paler showing its face there. But after this brief reunion, both you and Rick walked. Right from your departure, you regrouped and pulled together your sons Cody on bass and Nick on drums, alongside a fellow named Costa Varvakidis, and a rotating rhythm guitar chair currently filled by a Justin Cole for the Retro-Minded Hatriot. So here you are sounding more Exodus than Exodus sounds since Pleasure of the Flesh. I mean, seriously, this album's pretty impressive. And if anything, it's too punishing while still holding on to a very traditional vibe. The aggression never lets up for a minute.
Honestly, I didn't want to do another band. I did not want to do another band. Think about it. You got to come up with a name. You got to come up with a logo. And this is just a stupid shit. We haven't even written a song yet. You haven't started hiring people, which again, because then you'll have the revolving rhythm guitar door like we've had. You know what I mean? So all the shit that's gone on, honestly, I didn't want to do this. I need this kid Cousin. This kid, and again, you're saying it sounds much more like Exodus. I have to tell you, I don't write the fucking riffs. You
wow.
know? I don't write them. I write the lyrics. Everybody says that to me. God, it sounds so much like Exodus and Legacy. I think, yeah, it really does. Guess what? I don't play guitar. So I don't write the riffs. I think I magically do and then pick up the mic. I don't. This kid just is channeled into what I am and what I write and what is good and what's killer. So, I mean, every song that we write, it seems like it's great. It's got aggression in it, and it sounds good. It's got a good flow and a good dynamic to it. So I think it's great, too. I wouldn't have been able to do this, honestly, with any other of the million guitar players out there that would love to put a band together with Steve Cedro Sousa, I'm sure, you know, but this kid fits really well, and he writes, I mean, honestly, I write these lyrics effortlessly. They just flow, and I've just flown with it, and look, I mean, last year we gave you Heroes of Origin, which was, I mean, to me, a monumental record. I loved it, brutally fucking heavy, through and through. That record is like a palm, a hand, right up to your nose, 10 meters from your nose, and when it's over, it's pulled away, and you can breathe like, oh, shit. Dying is a Dream is more refined killer, more
right.
Stealth killer. It's very dark. It's very heavy. It's very moody. It's got a lot of more dynamics to it than just straightforward vocally, musically, production-wise, the whole bit.
Right.
Which, I mean, 12 months later, you've got this much of a dynamical change.
Yep.
From a band, you know, what do you think's coming in the future? You
right.
know what I mean? I got young kids here. Got to remember, oldest kid's 25. I got 25, my son Cody's 23, and then my son Nick's 20, and then Justin's 18, he'll be 19. So I got a young crew, and young, I'm a brand new hot rod, brand new parts, brand new motor, brand new blower. And he said, this thing's ready to go. Look at my last two. My last two hot rods are running really good now, aren't they? They're up in the world running damn good. Yeah, well, I got me a new hot. I got me a new race car. Y'all got me a new race car. And it's real fast. And it's real heavy. And this race car's going to be around for a long time. So I build them. I know how to build them.
Tapping into where you're going, your sons come from a very different generation. I mean, they weren't exactly raised on good music like we came up with. So where is all this authentically 80s thrash feel hailing from?
I think they know the old man. They get what, especially Nicholas, my son who plays drums. He is more, he really understands it. He gets it. Cody's way into Black Dahlia, way into Faithful, way into Amon Amarth. Anything coming on right now, very busy, technical stuff. Mastodon loves that type of stuff. Justin is into Death Cult Apocalypse, that kind of stuff. Dying Fetus, all that kind of extreme death metal.
Right.
Most of them listens to it all. I listen to anything that's heavy, but obviously, I listen to Priest,
right.
Saxon. I listen to Shadowsfall. I listen to Cannibal Corpse. I get stuck in Merciful Fate fucking era. Times where I had 2 months, I listen to King Diamond in a row. You know what I mean?
Well, that's our generation. So.
It's just one of those things. So I think the balance of everybody and knowing their backgrounds and just being pro-metal, it makes it work really well. And my sons, they know what to do because they've been in this forever. I mean, you know, they grew up going to, you know, Chuck Billy's their friend, their dad's friend. Phil Bimble's their dad's friend. They don't know these guys as rock stars. You know what I mean? They don't. So they know better, and they're very, all of them are very mature when it comes to that. So I think that's where that comes from.
And there was no pushback, like, geez, I got to play with Dad again.
Well, no, I think it's a plus for them. Besides, Dad's cool as hell.
Right.
Dad doesn't get away with some shit.
That's the difference.
You know what I mean? Which is funny, I know the metal meeting, and then we're in the dressing room, and it was like the first time where somebody walked over to the table and pulled out some blow and threw it on the table and started lying. And they both look at me, and I go, what? You're doing drugs backstage. You're in the NFL now. This is what they do in the NFL. Okay? So just don't stick your fucking face in it, and you'll be fine. Believe me.
Do you need me to edit that part, or are you okay with that?
I don't give a shit. No way. Right. Anything I say, you do not need to edit.
Good.
Believe me, I don't care.
I'm very strict.
Let me tell you, anything that I tell you is open game, man. Don't you worry about that with me. I'm a straight shooter, and I like to tell the truth. I've always been that way.
So, once again, in true 80s thrash fashion, like we said earlier, the politics are front and center. And then one song that I thought it could be read in two ways was My Cold Dead Hands, with that American phenomenon, everybody's got or killing people with a gun. I'd rather be a criminal than give up on the hunt. I got the impression initially that this might have been anti-stand your ground, but it also could be looked at, like what apparently really is, from a more libertarian pro-NRA angle. So can I infer from this in, like, the band's name that you haven't surrendered to this, like, media propaganda machine? You're just kind of, you know, you're seeing things like they are,
exactly,
you know what I mean?
I'm not surrendering to it. To me, I'll give you my definition of a hatriot, and I don't even know if there is one, but this is where I'm coming from. A hatriot is somebody who, you know who's a perfect example of a hatriot? Jesse the Body Ventura, the guy who was a governor. He's a perfect hatriot. That guy was a Navy SEAL, went to war for his country, served as an official for his country, loves his country more than anything else. But does he agree with what goes on in the infrastructure of the politics or the law, force of the world, or all the hypocrisy? He does not. So that's exactly what a hatriot is. It's a real person. Hatriot's a guy who loves his country, proud to be an American, an English person. A hatriot could be from France. A hatriot could be anything. A hatriot is somebody who's for the people, by the people, like it started out, not for the establishment built by the machine,
right.
You know, basically. So that's where I come from as far as hatred is concerned.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, regardless of where, you know, everybody individually might stand on particular issues, we need more bands like that out there spreading independent thought and the importance of questioning authority wherever it might raise its ugly head rather than just accepting whatever line of crap they feed you to take away your civil liberties, social programs, workplace rights, whatever.
Agreed.
So hats off to you for carrying the flag of what this nation's supposed to stand for.
Thank you. Well, I mean, again, the interview is very honest. And am I here? Do you want me to edit that? No. Anything I say is not edited. You do not edit. It's great. It comes. That's what I want you to know. I want you to know what's in my head.
Right.
I don't care, you know, and I don't sugarcoat it. I never have. I keep it the way it should be. You know, it's very violent. It's all my subjects are.
You know what I mean? It's very violent because that's what we deal with. But again, I don't, you know, try to sugarcoat or anything or try to wash it down. If it bugs me, you know, and honestly, Silence of the House of the Lord came from a documentary I saw about these priests who had run this, I think it was in Pennsylvania, where this one priest had this congregation of deaf children in the 50s and 60s. And again, they couldn't speak out for themselves, number one. And number two, who in the hell at that time, if you were to go tell your mom and dad, the priest is going to believe you?
Yeah,
it was
right.
Like I was, we were talking earlier, they're the greatest thing since sliced bread, and I think that that's the mentality.
Yeah.
I know that, so I can get away with this. That's why I do not have a problem with jamming it. I just don't.
Like we're saying, this isn't just one track we're talking about. You've got this stuff all over the record. You mentioned earlier, you slipped in this anti-Putin lyric and supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Well, you mentioned Freeing the Van Pussy Riot, and then you've got World
right.
Funeral, which in its few lyrics manages to tap into the subject of unregulated greed driving us to environmental, economic, and political ruin.
Correct.
I mean,
correct.
You know.
Exactly.
It's hard not to talk
exactly.
politics when you deal with a band that speaks to the subject as openly, as forcefully as Hatred does. So, you know, you got to expect a little of this stuff.
Well, sure, I have no problem with that because I stand by what I say, and it's not something where I'm just writing something to try to get a rise out of
right.
somebody. I truly follow it, and I truly believe it, you know what I mean? And that's why, if it bothers me, and if you read the lyrics, and you know, you read it, you go, wow, he fucking knows what he's talking about, you know? He
yeah.
actually goes into it, and I do. I'm not going to write something that I'm not necessarily comfortable with, or I don't know with, or it's, oh shit, I'm going to stick my foot in my mouth. Really? That doesn't stand for that? Oh shit, I said it did. You know what I mean? And I don't do that. I mean, I think that I'm really good about it, and I tell it like it is. I said this a million times, I do not sugarcoat shit. I let it go like it is, so.
So you're on a Euro label, Massacre Records, which is better known for their gothic metal acts like Theater of Tragedy, Coronatus, Mortal Love, and Edenbridge.
Right.
Although some classic metal acts like Whiplash, Fate's Warning, Chastain, and Hellion, and now Hatred have made the move over that way of late. So what's going on there?
Well, I think they're starting to pick up better acts. They're starting to realize that if they put some effort into it, that more things are going to come. And they've been a credible label for years. Now, King Diamond was with them in the past.
Yep.
They had some good assets. So they need, in my eyes, when we signed with them, I was like, so who do they have? And they're like, well, they have this band. I'm all, who the hell are they? I don't hear. I go, we the most famous band, and we just signed with them. But I think since then, in the last year, and then again, they've hired Dustin Hardman.
Right.
He was a really good guy, and he's working, and that element wasn't there last year. So I think that doing what it takes to take it to the next level, and they know that they've got some good talent in their gate, you know, especially with us. I know that. You know, I was telling anybody before Heroes of Origin, when we were on that trying to get signed, I'm like, you sign me, believe me, you're going to be glad that you did. And those labels that passed on this are probably kicking themselves in the ass because
yep.
I've been watching those labels, and I have put out two great records in the time that some of their bands have not put out anything.
Yep.
You know, so that's what tells me, you know, there was a couple of conflicts of interest between a few bands where some labels didn't necessarily want to pick us up, you
yep.
know, and so we understood that. Well, those bands that they kind of had a conflict of interest about have not done a record since I've already put out two. And my old take was, as well, are you in business or are you, you know, trying to kiss somebody's ass here? So it's just, you know, again, I told, you know, I'm putting out another one. I'm going to the studio in January. I set goals like that. So like last night in practice, well, guys, we had just gotten our discs. The first time we actually got to see
right.
the discs, the label had sent it to us. And I'm like, oh, isn't that killer? Look at Justin was so excited because it's his record.
Right.
You know, and Justin's looking at his record. And well, isn't that great? I'm like, cool. Start writing the next one. You know, sweet fellas. You know, time to chill. I know you guys all want to soak up in your lovely little album, but you want to be on top of this world? We need to start writing. So, Coaster and I say that to the band, and then I pull Coaster aside and I go, you got him? He goes, yeah, I got him. He goes, believe me, I was drained after this one, but I've got to get it back. I mean, you have to. That's what shows a good musician and a good band, so I need you to do this. So he was all very much, he's, you know, we're ready. We're going to start writing. We actually have two so far.
Already,
the next
wow.
one. Already two, yeah.
Damn.
I already have the title of the next record. I can't tell you. I'm going to say it in the summertime, but I already have the title of the next album. I'm already working on the artwork.
Wow. Wow, looking
I'm screwing around.
No, you guys
talked about me get 3 records in 2 years, man. 3 records in 3 years.
That's it. I mean, I can't even think of it. It must have been like the 60s the last time I heard something like that. So.
Right. People don't want to do that. It's always 3-4 years. It's like to write 40 minutes of music, really? Are you that busy in the fucking day? I thought this is what you wanted to be.
Yep.
I have a full-time job to still put out 2 albums in a year,
exactly,
you know?
That's right.
So, no rest for the wicked, my man. But that's okay. I got lots of time to sleep when I'm fucking dead. So
you've got a truly intense band behind you, and clearly haven't lost any of the vinegar to fatherhood in the intervening years. Given that, I have to ask, are there any tour plans for Hatriot in the works?
Yeah, we're actually going to South America in May on a headlining track. I think there's like 4 shows they have lined up. We're going to go to Europe in July with Artillery and Onslaught, and then we're going to come back. We have some stuff with DRI we're doing in California in August and September, and then we're going to do the States with Gamma Bomb for, I think, just 2 or 3 weeks in October, and then we're going back to Europe in December to do Eindhoven Metal Meeting, which we played this year, which was great, and some more kind of headlining dates. There are some tour plans. Unlike Heroes, when we're like, the album comes out, and they're like, hey, Dad, aren't we supposed to be on tour right now? Well, son, in the past we used to be. And like, so I'm saying, hey, Dad, are we going on tour? Well, no. When I used to put records out with Exodus, we used to go on tour, but maybe they don't fucking do that anymore. But then, you know, like, it's management. Everybody. It's you. It's everybody. Everybody's fucking this up. I'm like, no, you're a new band,
yep.
And there's 50 million bands out there now, okay. All vying for that spot. You got to prove yourself. So I tell you what, so like 2 weeks after Heroes was out, just like now, I was like, okay, let's start writing the next record. And like, well, what? We just put a record out. When Machine Head puts out a record, they don't write songs. I go, you're not fucking Machine Head. So you can just start writing songs, pal. Because they're used to listening to Phil. Phil goes on tour. Phil comes over to the house all the time. And then, you know, when they're in writing mode, and we're like, say the same thing with Exodus. We did the same thing. We went. We toured. We never wrote on the road. We came home. We didn't have jobs. We wrote the next album, and boom, that's what we did.
Right.
You know, so now it's a little bit different. So now this year we've been offered a lot more things. A lot more things are coming our way. Besides, Dawn of the New Centurions really getting received really, really well. Heroes got received really well, and Dawn of the New Centurion is really, really topping that right now. So everybody's very excited for it, and we are excited as well. Again, we're not shelving this record. We're just staying busy.
Do you have anything you'd like to plug, or do you want to point listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Yeah, if you guys can catch up anything you're looking for, just go to HatriotMetal.com, and there's Facebook and Twitter there. And I'm not the big social media guy, but my sons, they're all over it. I mean, and you send a message or anything, they put up funny stuff all day long and every day. And so we're very involved in that. You know, the fans can come up and have a question for me or something like that if they want. You know, any of our dates. We actually just signed a merchandising deal, so they're going to start putting, you know, you can go there and get Hatriot merchandise. So that's going to be coming really soon. A lot of things going on.
Well, with that, Steve, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema. And, you know, I'd love to have you back to talk to your next album next year.
No problem, man. We'll be back. And again, this will be like a yearly thing because I said I'm probably going to do 3 more records in the next 4 years.
Nice.
So I plan on staying busy. I know that we want to be big. We want to be a big band. We want to play the big festivals. We want to go on tour. We want to do this as our living like I have done in the past. And, you know, the only way to do that is to go and work hard and put out great music that people love. And I think because we're all still big fans, especially myself, but I think we're achieving that right now. So just keep looking out for us, man.
All right. So like I said, it was great talking to you. That was a fun interview. And
thank you.
So I don't know if they edit that one section. You're sure about that, right?
Yeah, I embedded shit. Yeah, dude, I say it. I said, believe me, I'm fine with it. I like that. I'm very honest, and I think that people know that from the way they read my interviews and the way I come across when they hear my audio interviews. I'm very honest with it. Yeah, don't edit that out. I mean, I don't care. I'm good. I mean, basically, it's a conversation that you and I are having,
exactly.
And I love that. It's better than me just... Yes, on Pleasures of the Flesh, I was, it was cool.
Exactly.
Yes. No. Oh, I don't know. Well, that was a good record, I think. And since I'm not, I try to give you a very intimate interview, so you know it's really coming from my heart and that you feel that way. And I appreciate your time as well, because all you're doing is putting my band where my band wants to be. So I appreciate you very much.
And you deserve it, man. All
right. Thanks, brother.
Have a good night, and hope to talk to you next year.
Have a good evening. I will talk to you soon. Metal horns up.
Rock on.
Okay, brother. Talk to you soon. Be good.
And to close out our interview with Zetro, here's another one from Hatriot. This is Your Worst Enemy. Thanks for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Steve Zetrosouza. Next time on Third Eye Cinema, Eden brings us incomparable Ron Ball. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician who'd like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network. Part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience. Next week, or actually next time, 2 weeks from now.
This is Lambal from Edenbridge, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
And coming up over the next month or two.
Okay. Hi, everybody. This is me, Christine, from Neve Size, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Rock on.
Okay, hello, this is Trollman from Trollfest, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Keep it real, people.
Okay. Hi, everybody, this is Chris Pachanka. Hi, everybody, this is Chris Pachanka from Vanishing Point, all the way in Australia. You listen to Third Eye Cinema. Check it out. Crank it up.
This is Dave Gaughan from the Canadian folk power metal band Scythia, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Name of the show is Third Eye Media, right?
Oh, Third Eye Cinema.
Cinema, okay. It says media here on my schedule. Okay, so Third Eye Cinema. So, hey, everybody, this is Pete Ziegler of Iron Savior, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Have fun and enjoy the ride.
Nice.